a brief recap from yesterday. So far, only a Buddha and a Buddha. Dogen's essay begins by saying that a person cannot realize Buddha Dharma, that only a Buddha together with a Buddha can fully exhaust it, can completely realize the true characteristic of all things. And then Dogen says, anything we think about this realization is has nothing to do with it, or isn't a help for it, and doesn't actually touch it. When we realize the truth, it won't be like any of our thoughts about it beforehand. And then, so this is just kind of like a kind of warning that if we think we know what it's going to be, that's not it. And then there's the practice. He gives this kind of straightforward practice, and I propose this is the practice that we can take up throughout the session as we get into all these complexities and everything. The basic practice is pretty simple, which is just to not add more color, not wish for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. Not wanting things to be a little better than they are, or worse than they are, if we're that kind of person. and not trying to speed things up, like spring is here and we want to get on with summer. Not wishing things would go a little faster or a little slower, like spring's here and like let's just have spring forever. The world is in constant change and flux, and just letting this apparent world do what it does and be as it is without wishing it was otherwise. Just according with the universe, letting our life just be in accord with what's happening. And Sesshin is a great opportunity for that, because we naturally, all kinds of wishes arise for more or less, or better, or less discomfort, something more exciting, all kinds of things come up, and we're just letting go, dropping off all these wishes. Hey, welcome.
There's a cushion here.
So even while listening to these stories, we can still keep this basic practice going of just letting everything be as it is. Now we have this section today, move into this different territory. It's still about Buddha, but now we're going to get into the three bodies of Buddha, or at least a couple bodies of Buddha. So we could tell various stories about the tradition of the Trikaya, the three bodies. So here's one story. I'm sure everyone would tell it differently. And to, you know, connect it to our life right now, we've been talking about yesterday a little bit Buddha nature. So we all have this so-called Buddha nature, or Tathagata Garbha, the womb of the Tathagata, of the Buddha, or the heart of the Tathagata, that's an endowment of all living beings. So we have this, but it's obscured by our thoughts, even our thoughts about what it is, obscure it. It's kind of what Dogen's saying. But even though words don't reach it, we could say a little bit about it, that it's basically just, one way to talk about it is it's just empty awareness, empty non-dual awareness. So it's not just nothingness, it's not just vast emptiness, because it's aware, it's like alive and experiencing awareness. And it's not just awareness like right now we're aware of sound and color and thoughts happening here, but that's like we call it dualistic awareness. It's like there's a mind that's aware of objects in the world. So it's not like that, because it's completely empty of all objects and subjects. Therefore, it's non-dual awareness and an empty awareness, or we could say aware emptiness. So this has these two aspects of it's totally aware and alive, and it's totally free from all dualistic constructions and obscurations. And it's here with us right now, always, and all beings, the most confused, obscured, suffering beings equally share this Buddha nature. It's just a beautiful teaching. And it's fully complete, actually. It's like it's not like it's a little baby Buddha nature that grows into a full Buddha. It's like that Buddha nature that's here with us right now, according to these teachings, is like it's fully complete. It's like exactly the same as a fully realized Buddha. It doesn't need to be improved at all, or made, or increased, or anything. But the difference between us and the fully realized Buddha is that it's obscured. So it's not a matter of improving the Buddha nature, it's a matter of just letting go of the obscurations that block it. So it's more and more revealed. Until, and this is the Bodhisattva path, is like dropping away, letting go of the all kinds of cognitive and emotional and other obscurations that block this empty, non-dual awareness, obscure it. So that's the Bodhisattva path. And at the when this Mahayana story of Buddhahood is that after a long or short time, all the obscurations are fully dropped away, and so Buddha nature is now fully revealed. It's fully unobscured. Again, it's not like that's any different. The Buddha nature is not any different than what it is right now. It's just that it's fully unblocked, and then it's called, instead of being called Buddha nature or the womb of the Tathagata, like that gives birth to Tathagata, now it's just called the Tathagata. It's called Buddha. It's called Buddhahood. And it's called the Dharmakaya. So the Dharmakaya is simply this non-dual awareness, empty of all dualistic constructs and illusions and imaginations. And another part about it is that it's also fully endowed with all the Buddha qualities, like great compassion, unhindered responsiveness to all beings, total unconditional love. And because it's endowed with those qualities, also, those qualities can't be made or produced either. So the teaching is that the Buddha nature that we have right now, also has these qualities of, you know, we have unconditional love and unhindered compassion, but just like the awareness, those qualities are also obscured by our belief that there's a self here that we have to put first and take care of as the, you know, before we just give ourselves to everyone in the universe. That's those kind of obscurations are blocking that, you know, unhindered compassion. But it's here too. So anyway, the story is that the Dharmakaya is the fully revealed and unobscured non-dual awareness endowed with all these Buddha qualities of great compassion and love and also skillful means, totally knowing intuitively exactly what every living being needs and how to respond accordingly. You gotta admit, it's a nice story. This is the Mahayana, right? This is like, it's an awesome, awesome proposition. And the beauty. What's that?
I wish it wasn't just knocking.
And
I wish it was.
It is knocking.
I know.
I mean, that's
I wish
part
it
of the story.
Just knocking.
Yeah.
I wish it was.
I mean, it's knocking, but we keep, you know, turning away from the knocks. But Sachin's a good time to, like, okay, just knock on me. I'm just open. My door's open, Buddha.
It's quiet enough.
It's quiet.
Maybe you can hear
it. Yeah. It takes quiet, you know? I mean, it's knocking even when it's noisy, but it's easier to hear when it's quiet, exactly. And when we're less busy, our busyness is a big part of what is obscuring this. So that's the first body of Buddha, the Dharmakaya, is like the sometimes said the reality body. Dharmakaya means like the Dharma body, the truth body, reality body. And it's, you know, the Dharmakaya is not like, doesn't look like a person. It has no location, it has no form even. It's formless, boundarylessness, but it's not nothing. It's actually awareness. It's like this formless awareness that can, and it's omniscient, it knows everything and can respond anyhow. But it's because it's formless, how can it relate to beings? Right? How can this great compassion meet beings? So it needs a way to do that. Compassion needs to meet, like, us. Us persons. Us living beings. So the Dharmakaya manifests another, kind of say, another body. This other Buddha body called the Nirmanakaya. It's like the manifestation body, the transformation body. And that's like, looks like the form of a person. So we have Shakyamuni Buddha in somewhere around 500 BC in India, was born at a certain time and lived on the earth and walked around and talked to people and ate food and slept and breathed and did things like people do. And the Mahayana story is that was like a transformation body of the Dharmakaya, a manifestation of this pure awareness as what looks like a living person. So we celebrate these Buddha bodies in the meal chant, right? We say the pure Dharmakaya, Vairochana Buddha. It's kind of funny that the Dharmakaya is formless, boundless Buddha body, has a name, Vairochana Buddha. And you sometimes see pictures of Vairochana Buddha. And doesn't that seem more like a transformation body? Yeah, in Japanese. Dainichi Nyorai, the great sun, the great illumination Buddha. So I think that's just because it's hard to relate to boundless formlessness, so we can give it a name like Vairochana and give it a mudra. And then I think this version of the Neo Chan actually says something like, myriad transformation bodies, or myriad Shakyamuni Buddhas. It makes it kind of plural.
Right? Rochana.
Well, there's Rochana, the Sambhogakaya. But I think it says something like Shakyamuni Buddhas with an S, which I thought is interesting because it's kind of like...
Numerous
Nirmanakaya.
Shakyamuni Buddhas.
Shakyamuni Buddhas.
Buddhas.
So, like, there's, you know, the Dharmakaya can manifest not just as one body, but numerous transformation bodies, and maybe numerous Shakyamuni Buddhas that appear to different people differently. And sometimes we hear stories of, like, there's these lotus flowers with Shakyamuni Buddha on each flower that, you know, only maybe appears that way to certain bodhisattvas. And then later on, there was this... So these are these two Buddha bodies, earlier version of the teaching. Later, it seems like later Mahayana sutras brought up this third one called Sambhogakaya, or the bliss body. My teacher sometimes said that. Orgasmic bliss body. Sambhogakaya. And that's like... not exactly in between the Dharmakaya and Nirmanakaya, but it's like the body that arises due to bodhisattva vows before becoming a Buddha. Various bodhisattvas made these vows like, when I become a Buddha, I already feel my compassion starting to overflow, and I can't do this now because I don't have the unhindered powers of a Buddha. I still have some obscurations. But when I become a fully unobscured Buddha, I want to create a pure land where living beings can come and become Buddhas. Basically, a pure land is like this land that's created by the vows of bodhisattvas with the perfect conditions to realize Buddhahood. So it's just like a huge zendo, a pure land. So this is the Jikoji Pure Land. The conditions are perfect for becoming a Buddha. It's very quiet. There's nothing but birds and chickens and
turkeys.
And sun shines, and we have this big, spacious, clean zendo. And so that's how I picture these Buddha lands, is they're kind of like Jikoji. They're these beautiful places and set up for practice. And there's descriptions. You can read descriptions. Like, the most famous pure land is probably Amitabha's pure land. So Amitabha Buddha, before he was a Buddha, made this vow to create that pure land. And sure enough, he became a Buddha named Amitabha, and therefore was able to manifest this, just like they can manifest Nirmanakayas, you can manifest pure lands as a Buddha, and made the Western paradise, Sukhavati, the bliss realm, to practice in. These are strange stories to rational Westerners. But this is our heritage. And you also don't find these stories in early Buddhism. These are like great vehicle Mahayana stories. And they're just about vastness. So are they true or not? Well, we don't know until we're a Buddha. But we can open to these vast, inconceivable, kind of cosmic stories. And I think just opening to their vastness helps us open to the vastness of our Buddha nature. And it kind of puts our little obscurations in perspective. Well, like, you know, if things are really like that, then like me worrying about some issue with my boss on Monday, it's like, it kind of puts it in perspective. It's kind of like, well, maybe that's not as big a... an issue as I thought in this huge realm of Buddhism.
And yet so many of the Zen stories come back and say, ordinary mind is...
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Word, you know, and we have... It brings it back.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. And Zen stories about the Dharmakaya. So, so putting aside this Sambhogakaya for the time being, we have this the Dharmakaya, and then its manifestation in response to beings as a Nirmanakaya, which is like a Shakyamuni Buddha, but also, I think the sutras even say this, that it doesn't even have to take the form of a person. It could be an animal or a plant or a mountain or a rock. All, you know, Buddha can manifest due to these infinite skillful means as anything that will help beings awaken. It could manifest as those little spider web threads that are like going from the roof down to the railing outside the zendo, if that helps us open to the vastness. So we have some Zen stories about the Dharmakaya responding to beings. So one classic one is Saoshan asked Venerable Qiang, the Buddha's Dharmakaya is like vast emptiness. That's right. When the Buddha's Dharmakaya is like vast emptiness, it responds to beings like the moon reflected in water. So the Dharmakaya responds to beings as like a Nirmanakaya, and it has this transformation response body. And that the way that happens poetically is like the moon reflected in the water. The moon is like the pure Dharmakaya, and it's we can see its reflection in the water. We can't quite see the Dharmakaya itself. It's inconceivable, but the moon can manifest a reflection in the water, and we can relate to that. We can see the reflection as, for example, Shakyamuni Buddha. It's like a reflection that we can see, or a sutra, maybe a reflection that of the pure Dharmakaya that appears in a way that we can relate to it. So it responds to beings like the moon reflected in water. How do you, brother, understand this principle of response? How do you understand how the Dharmakaya responds to living beings to help them in this, you know, by manifesting a Nirmanakaya? And Qiang said, it's like a pulley looking at a well. You might know this story. Sometimes it's translated as like a donkey looking at a well.
What?
A donkey, like a donkey peering over and looking into a well and seeing its reflection, much like, you know, it sees itself reflected in the pure Dharmakaya in order to, you know, the Dharmakaya is manifesting this water, you could say, to help a donkey realize who it is. It's giving this aid of water. But apparently this Chinese character is also means pulley. Like, so you can picture like a well with the pulley that lowers the bucket down. So it's like the, which is, has in a way more meaning, I think, because it's like the, it's like we're like a pulley, you know, and we're like trying to catch the pure water of the Dharma down in that deep well. It's like our practice of Zazen is kind of like lowering a bucket down into that deep, dark well and trying to scoop up some Buddha. And so we're just this kind of rusty old pulley up there that kind of creaks and doesn't quite roll quite right. And, you know, we can barely... It would be barely turn enough to lower our bucket down. But meanwhile, the water's down there. Before we even scoop it up, we can look down as the pulley. We can look down and see our reflection, and that's like the principle of response.
Yeah.
You know, without even scooping it up, we're already us. Our pulley, our rusty pulley, is purely reflected in this water. And then Saoshan says, "That's pretty good answer." You know, like a pulley looking in a well, but you only got 80%. They often say this in these Zen stories. You only got 80%. And Chang says, "Well, what would you say, brother?" And Saoshan said, "It's like the well looking at the pulley. So 80% is like the pulley looking at the well. And but to complete the picture, we also say it's like the well looking at the pulley." In other words, the way the Dharmakaya responds to help beings is like this mutual interpenetration. Like it's not just like we, you know, do our pulley work of, you know, lowering the bucket and doing this hard work that pulleys do in order to meet it. It's meeting us too. So we're looking toward, looking upward. We look for to meet Buddha, and Buddha looks down at us, or Buddha looks up at us. You could also say, another image for like how this meeting could happen. You know, you can't really talk about this exactly, so this is all this metaphors. But like, we're like a our Buddha nature, right? That's here with us right now, is like the same nature as the Dharmakaya, actually, right? It's just that it's obscured, but it's like a guitar string, and then Buddha's Dharmakaya is like, you know, a really, you know, thick guitar string or something. Or maybe not. Maybe it's actually exactly the same guitar string, but it's vibrating, fully, like, vibrating Buddhahood. And it's vibrating is very close to us all the time. It's all around us. And we start, our string starts resonating with it. It's like the same frequency because it's the same nature. So Buddha's string is vibrating, and then our Buddha nature is like, that's how it responds. It's like they're not exactly saying, "Hey, wake up over here." You know, that might be the way that the knock happens. It's just this vibration, and then our vibration is just in resonance with it. You could say also our it's hard for our string to vibrate fully because it's all wrapped up with in cloth. You can't, like, it's very, it's a dull sound, where the Buddha string is unwrapped, has no obscurations wrapping it up. But still, we're in resonance all the time. So something like this is how this response. So the Dharmakaya and the Nirmanakaya. And as I was contemplating this, I just got another hit on only a Buddha and a Buddha. Can you see this? Like, how about only a Buddha together with a Buddha is the Dharmakaya and the Nirmanakaya together can fully realize it or get to the bottom of the matter. If you just have the Dharmakaya, this formless, boundless Buddhahood itself, but with no way to respond to beings, it can't exhaust the matter. It can't fully reveal the true marks of all things. It needs a manifestation in this world.
Maybe that fully revealed or exhausted is Sambhogakaya.
Maybe all three. Yeah. Only Dharmakaya together with the Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya can fully exhaust it. But yeah, that could be. It's like, because we were saying, well, a Buddha is fully complete. Well, they have no blind spots, we were talking about yesterday. Why do they need another Buddha? But if you look at Buddha as the Dharmakaya, which is Buddha, Buddha's body, Buddha's true body, you need another Buddha to fully reveal it. The Dharmakaya has to respond to beings. It needs a Nirmanakaya and maybe needs the Sambhogakaya too. It needs to create these pure lands for bodhisattvas to enter. So one other possibility of only a Buddha and a Buddha is these three Buddha bodies working together. Yeah. So we have this, we're about to enter the story of Changsha Jingshen, also called Tiger Chen. And I just want to share a couple of other stories before we hear the story that Dogen tells here about the Dharmakaya. Because Changsha, it seemed like he often talked this way. He has this style about bringing up like the natural world and the great earth or the universe and this kind of vast and actually ordinary world is what he's often responding to people about, you know, what is Buddha and so on. It's vast, but it's like the world that we experience, or things we experience. So he sometimes talks like this. One time he entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "If I give you some spiritual teaching, then there will be grass growing in the hall 10 feet deep." So there'll just be all these weeds growing if I say anything here. But this is something that can't be stopped. So I'm going to do it anyway. "So I say to you that all the world in the 10 directions is the true monk's eye. The whole world pervading the 10 directions is the true monk's complete body. All the world in the 10 directions is your own brilliant light. The whole world in 10 directions is within your own light. And the whole world in 10 directions, there's not a being that is not you." And Dogen has another fascicle called The 10 Directions, Shogo Genso Jippo, where he extensively comments on this story. But the point here, I think is interesting, is that he's saying, he's talking about the whole world in 10 directions. Literally, like the great earth in 10 directions is your true body. And your complete body and your eye and your light. "This is what I've taught you when I've said that all Buddha dharmas and all beings of the three worlds are the great light of wisdom. But even before this light was propagated, what is the place where you existed? Before this light was propagated, before Buddhas and before sentient beings, from where did the mountains, rivers, and the great earth come from?" And then a monk asked, "What is the true monk's eye?" And Changsha said, "So vast and wide that you can't leave it." And then Changsha said, "Those who become Buddhas and ancestors can't leave it. The six realms of sentient beings also can't leave it." And the monk said, "I don't understand what it is that they can't leave." And Changsha said, "In the day, see the sun. In the night, see the stars." The monk said, "I don't understand." Changsha said, "The lofty mountains are colored green upon green." So this inconceivable realm is like the workings of nature. Changsha is describing it as the natural workings of the sun coming up in the day and the moon at night, and the mountains being green and green and green. I think this is one of these cases where it's the totally ordinary, it's vast, the vast entire world, but the ordinary world as we see it. I don't think it's I don't think he's talking about some metaphor here. I think he's talking about the sun and the moon that we see, and the mountains green as we see them. Changshu is also the one who has the saying about the 100-foot pole. Maybe some of you know that one. It says, atop a 100-foot pole, one has gained entry but hasn't yet reached the full truth. One must step forward from the top of the pole. Then the whole world, in 10 directions, is the complete body. It's the same kind of image, right? The full realization of truth, stepping off the top of the bodhisattva ladder into the Dharmakaya. The whole world in 10 directions is the true body. And then the monk asks, if one's at the top of the pole like this, how do you step forward? And Changsha said, the mountains of Long and the rivers of Li, these places in China. How do you step forward? This huge, vast world just swallows you up, just receives you. The monk said, I don't understand. And Changsha said, the whole land is under the emperor's control. The emperor being like a metaphor for Buddha. So the whole land is Buddha's land.
General answers to the... Is that another? General answers to the emperor. Like everything?
I don't know. Could be the same story, different version. Story. Could be a different story. It's not in this version. And one more. And this is, you know, if you can't quite grok how it could be that our true body is the whole world in 10 directions, and you're into the mind only teachings, some of you might have heard me rattle on endlessly about mind only, meaning like everything that we experience is manifestations of mind. Here's a kind of mind only approach to the same teachings. A monk asks Changsha, what is my mind? And Changsha said, all the worlds in 10 directions are your mind. Standard mind only. The monk said, if so, then there's no particular place where my body is manifested. And Changsha said, it is the place where your body is manifested. And the monk said, what is the place where it manifests? Changsha said, the great ocean, vast and deep. Sometimes the storehouse consciousness is likened to the vast ocean. The monk said, I don't understand. Changsha said, dragons and fish frolic freely, leaping and diving. Some warm-up stories about Changsha, who is really into the whole world in 10 directions as our true body. So now with all that about the Buddha bodies and only a Buddha and a Buddha as a background, now we enter this next section. At the bottom section of page 1, a teacher of old, who is Changsha, said, although the entire universe, and, you know, literally it actually says the great earth. So, looks like Kaz Tanahashi said, let's expand that a little bit. I think either one works. The earth is kind of nice because it's so concrete, right? It's like this earth that we live on. So, the entire great earth or the entire universe is nothing but the Dharmakaya, the dharma body of the self, or if we, that might sound like, of the self, I think it's saying something really straightforward. It's just like, of yourself. So some translations say, although the entire great earth is nothing but your Dharmakaya, is a maybe kind of straightforward way to put it. I don't think there's some mysterious thing about the self here. The entire universe is nothing but your Dharmakaya, or the Dharma body of yourself. You should not be hindered by the Dharma body. Although the entire great earth, the entire universe is your true Dharma body, you should not be hindered by the Dharma body. And so one translation puts quotation marks around that second Dharma body, which is a way to read that would be like, although the whole universe is your true Dharma body, you shouldn't be hindered by the Dharma body, meaning like your idea of the Dharma body, or the words, the Dharma body, or the concept of the Dharma body. I think that's a nice interpretation. It's a little more mysterious to leave that out and just say, or maybe more subtle teaching to just say that the whole universe is your true Dharma body, but don't be hindered by this Dharma body. Another way you could take that is, if we're talking about the whole earth here is our true body, and this is in an inconceivable way, we're not going to get this, a conceptual grasp on this, but having heard about the inconceivable Dharma body that is the fruition of our Buddha nature, you could say when our personal, you might even say, Buddha nature comes to full unobscuration, full fruition as Buddha's Dharma body, then the whole universe in 10 directions is our true body. But you could say because our Buddha nature is the same nature as the Dharmakaya already right now, even though we can't get a hold on this, the true universe is our true body right now. And that's kind of the Zen way of talking. It's not saying, well, all this will happen like a few eons from now when you become a fully manifest Buddha. It's saying right now, since you have this Buddha nature, your nature is that of a Buddha, your true body is this universe right now. It's just that, like, that's so inconceivable to us. But don't be hindered by the Dharma body. We might say, don't be hindered by what appears to be this earth. You know, this earth is our Dharma body, but like, if there's a huge earthquake in our Dharma body, right? If the earth is our Dharma body can have an earthquake. And then don't be hindered by that, you know, the earth shaking us around, because it's our true body. That might be another interpretation. If you're hindered by the Dharma body, you will not be able to turn freely, no matter how hard you may try. But there should be a way to be free from hindrance. What then is the way for all people to be free from hindrance? If you cannot say clearly how to free all people, you will soon lose even the life of the Dharma body and sink in the ocean of suffering for a long time. If you're asked in this way, how can you answer so as to keep the Dharma body alive and avoid sinking in the ocean of suffering? Before you turn the page! What do you think? Does anyone have any answers? If you're asked, how can you be free from hindrance? How would you answer to keep the Dharma body alive? That's pretty good. We chanted this morning, but we probably don't remember. It's all in your mind. Another version would be in classic Zen style. In that case, say, Dogen says, this is what you should say. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. Which is just what we already heard, right? You think Changsha already said that. The entire universe is nothing but the Dharma body of the self. just don't be hindered by the Dharma body. And then he goes into this thing like, how are you going to become free from hindrance? Now this is a real problem. Now you're going to get stuck in hindrance and be suffering for a long time. How can you get free? What should you say? Yeah, the entire universe is nothing but the Dharma body of itself. You don't need to even make up anything new. It's all there from the beginning. Or another version of that is, it's all your mind. I would say that is another way of saying it. When you say that the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self, words cannot express it. Or another translation is, when you say the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self, this expression is no expression. Or this expression is beyond expression. Or words, these words are, go beyond words. So this is the problem, that we live in a world of words, and they words are maybe one of the main obscurations that are going along with or wrapping up the cloth that's wrapping up the guitar string of Buddha nature. A lot of what that cloth is words. The obscurations that need to drop away are conceptual ideas and words. And yet, we have to speak in words, and Zen is all coming through words. So, we can say, and Dogen says, please do say in words, quote, the entire universe is the Dharma body of the self, unquote. But when you say that, know that those words don't actually reach it, or that this is an expression that's actually no expression. When words cannot express it, should we understand there is nothing to be said? Without words, ancient Buddhas said something. Or beyond expression, Buddhas expressed something. So this is always this play of words can't quite express it, but we need to, the Dharma comes in words, Buddhas speak, and words point at it, like the finger pointing at the moon. Very, very useful. It's just that it's not the moon. Or like, we could even say that the words, maybe Dogen's words even, are like a are like Nirmanakaya words. They're like a transformation of Dogen's Dharmakaya body, manifesting in response to beings like us, like the moon reflected in the water. So Dogen can say this stuff, and we're here receiving it. Somehow we ended up in this room where these strange words of Dogen are coming to us, and that's because of our pulley. It's like our pulley reeled us into such a room to, meet Buddha, and then Buddha's like coming through these really strange words in response to our effort, our rusty pulley effort. And it's meeting us always. It's always meeting us. It's just that, like, it's really, the meeting is inconceivable. There is birth or life. In Chinese, life and birth are the same character. You could translate it either way. As you could say, there's life and death, and there's death and life. There's birth and death, and there's death in birth. Death is entirely death, and birth is entirely birth. This is not because you make it so, but because Dharma is like this. Therefore, when Buddha turns the Dharma wheel, there is insight such as this and expression such as this. So Dogen likes to bring up the birth and death a lot. Like he's got a fascicle called Shoji, Birth and Death. And the Genjo Koan brings this up to where Dogen says, it's an unshakable teaching in Buddha's discourse that death does not turn into birth, and also birth does not turn into death. Accordingly, birth is understood as no birth, and death is understood as no death. Birth is an expression complete this moment, and death is an expression complete this moment. This is the Genjo Koan. Birth doesn't turn into death, and death doesn't turn into birth. Like, we don't say that winter is the beginning of spring or summer is the end of spring. This is the Genjo Koan teaching about each thing abiding in its Dharma position, just as it is, that fully includes everything else, but is independent of everything else at the same time. And so birth and death are like this. And I think he's similar idea here, that death is entirely death and birth is entirely birth. They're interdependent, and yet they're entirely themselves. Independent, we could say, in a way also. But we can also, there's both sides. Birth is in death, we could say, because their birth is a condition for death. You can't have death apart from birth. And death is a condition for birth. So they dependently co-arise. And his poetic way of saying this is maybe just that there is birth in death and death in birth, but that each one is entirely itself. This is one of Dogen's classic kind of models of reality, you could say. And why he brings this up at this point, I don't know. But now he's coming back again to know that it is also like this when Buddha manifests a body to awaken sentient beings. And in the original, it actually doesn't say Buddha, it just says, know that it's like this when manifesting a body to save sentient beings, is literally what it says. So we could say, when you manifest a body. But we're talking about a Buddha body, and now we're back into the multiple bodies of Buddha again now, right? It's like birth and death are like this, have this dynamic interdependence and independence in this ungraspable way. It's like this when Buddha Dharmakaya manifests a body, a Nirmanakaya body, to awaken or save sentient beings. And this is called awareness of no birth, or knowing and seeing birthlessness. Buddha manifests a body and awakens sentient beings means that awakening the sentient beings is itself the manifestation of the Buddha body. In the midst of awakening, sentient beings do not pursue manifestation. Seeing manifestation, do not look about for awakening. I think this is one of the most beautiful little nuggets in here. You might not have noticed. I take this as when our activity of helping beings, or cooking a meal in Sesshin to help beings, anything that we do with just a kind of open heart of giving to help sentient beings, we could look at as that is Buddha's body manifesting, the very activity of helping beings, as opposed to the reverse, that first we think, first we have to manifest a Buddha body, like, ready, here we go, kind of like a Star Trek thing, where they beam up Shakyamuni Buddha all those little particles. There's Shakyamuni Buddha on the earth. Now Shakyamuni Buddha is like, looking out. Well, I guess my job is to save some beings now. Let's turn some dharma wheels. And like, let's walk around till we find some to save. And I think instead of that, instead of first manifesting a body and then looking around for some beings to save, it's, in this case, it's the reverse. It's like the very act of saving beings. Saving is a big word, but awakening beings, anything we're doing, you could bring it down to just anything we're doing to help beings. That is the manifestation of the Dharma body, of Buddha manifesting a body. Does that make sense?
That activity itself makes
the activity itself makes the body. It's not like you first have the body and then you do the activity. The activity is the manifestation.
It comes to view with
the, yeah,
the activity.
So it's a nice way to look at a Nirmanakaya Buddha. Doesn't necessarily have to be a physical, you know, we're talking about, you know, people and trees and rocks and stuff, but maybe not even a physical object, but an activity. And maybe in the end, really only that, like, physical objects aren't actually what wake people up, right? If a spider web's going to wake someone up, it's not the spider web itself, it's the activity of the spider web, you know, appearing to our visual consciousness or something like that. Or
just that relationship. That
relationship.
Meeting, that meeting,
yeah, the meeting. The meeting is like an activity. So, again, Buddha manifests a body and awakens sentient beings, quotes, means that awakening sentient beings is itself the manifestation of the Buddha body. In the midst of awakening sentient beings, do not pursue some manifestation body other than that. Seeing a manifestation, do not look about for awakening. So this is also a very Zen-like thing, that just our activity, you know, practice and realization are not two, Dogen always says. So our activity of practicing for the benefit and of all beings and with all beings in, you know, in sesshin or in daily life, any kind of practice that's just helpful, is manifesting the body, how we could say, and see, and in that manifestation, don't look about for some other awakening. Pretty radical statement. You know, there it is right there, and yet, can we release our obscurations enough to really appreciate that? Understand that in the midst of awakening sentient beings, the Buddha Dharma is totally experienced. Explain it and actualize it this way. Know that it is the same with manifestation and having the Buddha body. Actualize it, in this case, is that character show that Dogen often talks about, practice and realization, or practice and actualization, is this character show that's different from the Satori character. They both mean something like realization. But when we hear it as a compound, practice and realization, it's not practice and Satori. I think maybe ever, it's as a combination, it's always practice and actualization or verification or confirmation, the show. So this is so because Buddha manifests a body and awakens sentient beings. This principle is clarified in that from the morning of attaining the way, Buddha's enlightenment, until the evening of parinirvana, when Buddha passed from the world, Buddha discoursed freely without words getting in the way. Or it's literally, without one word getting in the way. Discourse freely is jizai. In the Heart Sutra, we say it begins kanjizai bosatsu, and which is Avalokiteshvara. But usually for Avalokiteshvara, we say kanzeon, like the regarder of the sounds of the world. So it's interesting that it's maybe the only place that I've heard of Kanji Zai Bosatsu, Avalokiteshvara being the freely seeing. It's the same Kan as Kanzeon. Kanzeon is seeing world sounds, literally, seeing the sounds of the world. And Kanji Zai is like, Jizai is really like self-abiding, but as a compound it means, translated here, it's freely. So it's like the free flow. So it's like the, instead of the contemplator of the sounds of the world, it's like the freely contemplating bodhisattva, the unhindered, free-flowing, compassionate bodhisattva, Kanji Zai. So Buddha discourse like that, like Kanji Zai, without words getting in the way. Of course, he discoursed in words, but the words didn't get in the way. You know, there's that classic saying that, you know, a painting of a rice cake doesn't satisfy hunger, meaning like written teachings are like painted rice cakes, and they don't really satisfy our deepest yearnings for freedom. A painted rice cake does not satisfy hunger. But then Dogen, in his sneaky way, has another fascicle called The Painting of a Rice Cake, and where he says that it is precisely painted rice cakes that satisfy hunger. And actually hunger is painted hunger, and satisfaction is painted satisfaction, and everything is just painting, and everything that we know and experience, you could say, is in our world of things is like painting. It's like imagination. But in this world of words and imagination, and where we actually imagine that we're hungry too, we imagine that we're suffering and we need to be free, in that world, then these words can actually turn us, and Buddha can discourse freely with words, but without the words getting in the way. Buddha can serve up some painted rice cakes without giving us indigestion. Yada, yada, yada. any comments, questions on this? We can talk some more this afternoon. That's a lot. There's a lot in here, right?
Yeah, there is.
Every sentence. It's a lot of themes, but I always appreciate the, you know, this kind of Genzo way of Sesshin format, because you can read a Dogen fascicle, you could read this whole thing in 5 minutes and be like, that's kind of cool, there's some neat stuff in there. But to slow down like we're doing, right, and really get into it, it opens up this, all these other dimensions of it. And for me, partly what it's doing, I always thought this essay, Only a Buddha and a Buddha, was kind of weird, in the sense that there's all these like random ideas that don't seem to tie together so much. But as we're going through it more slowly, I kind of feel like it's starting to tie together more. Like I feel like the Only a Buddha and a Buddha at the beginning is now returning here with this Buddha manifesting a body, and the pure Dharmakaya is the great earth in 10 directions. And remembering too that this underlying practice set up at the beginning was just not wishing for something else. Something. S-U-M-P-U-N. Something else. thank you for your presence. Obviously, I wouldn't babble on like this if you weren't around. I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but it is helping me.
Thank you.
Open to this teaching, actually. So in that way, in this almost completely inconceivable way, it could be that you are the manifestation bodies of the Buddha coming to wake me up by your very presence.
You were trying to get in tune.
And we're all trying to get in tune with the vast Dharmakaya, like empty space, which is radiating incessantly and incandescently towards us every moment.